Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another week of Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. I am LJ, and Tweety should be on right now if the button went correctly.
What's going on, people?
Not a whole lot. Another beautiful, beautiful week in sports. How's everything going with you?
I'm going all right, man. Had a good weekend with my little league team, man. We got another win under our belt. That's 3 in a row. So far, my sports weekend looking good. Cowboys got a bye, so they can't disappoint me. So I'm all right this weekend.
Yeah. And no haterism going on out there in the world right now, because people don't have the Cowboy haters don't have the Cowboys to hate on. Before we jump into anything, I just want to remind the people out there listening, if you want to call in and give your opinion, the number is 646-668-2343. Again, the number is 646-668-2343. All right, we're going to jump into a couple of interesting topics that have come up over the past week. Big time game yesterday in the Big Ten of college football yesterday. Number 7 Michigan State played against number 12 Michigan. There was an interesting point in that game. One of Michigan's starting linebackers was ejected from the game for a targeting penalty. Did you happen to see the play?
Nah, I really didn't. I didn't get to catch hardly any college football last night. I just know a few scores and I've seen a few numbers, but I ain't heard nothing about the targeting play. What happened on that play?
It was kind of a hard, my personal opinion, a hard play to judge a little bit. The quarterback, they ran a quarterback draw, or it looked like a design run play to me. The quarterback, you know, he comes right up the middle, and he's probably, I'm going to say he's within 5 to 6 yards of the line of scrimmage. And he gets through the first 3 or 4 yards, sees a player, makes a cut. Oh, I think he made a cut. But anyways, he slides, you know, in within that little confined area where, you know, linebackers, linemen, he slides. Michigan linebacker sort of, I would say, in my opinion, dove at him or was trying to make the tackle before he hit the ground and kind of made some contact with him as he slid. But he didn't get thrown out. There was another guy who was getting blocked. And after the play, I don't know if it was after the whistle, the quarterback was already on the ground, but he fell on top of him, whatever you want to call it, and he got thrown out of the game. Now, my opinion, I don't think it was a very good call because, again, to me, he got blocked into the quarterback who was already on the ground. The play, not so much a big of a deal. It's kind of a bang-bang play. Actually, Alabama had a guy get thrown out for targeting as well. The penalty is – the result is kind of what I would like to take on. What do you think about that rule of a player? Let's say, for example, both of them happened in the first half of games, so neither one of those players got to play in the second half. And I know one of the guys was a starting linebacker, if I remember correctly, for Michigan. What do you think about the rule, the targeting rule, as far as the penalties as a result of it? You know, if it's in the second half, you miss the first half of the next game. But then the first half of a game, you miss the second half of a game. What do you think about that? Do you think it's too much, too little, just right?
Well, I mean, I guess they're really trying to, deter the whole unnecessary, you know, collisions that would lead to, I guess you would really say, unnecessary concussions. I guess it would be just right, because I guess they're trying to say they're going to suspend you for a true, complete game instead of saying if you did it in the first half, you missed the rest of this game and the rest of the next game. But honestly, I think it's right on time. I mean, you know, they need to, you know, stop doing it, first of all. It's like I say, it's unsafe. But yeah, I think the punishment is right on time because, you know, it would really not make sense if you're going to say I'm going to suspend you for a game and they do it in the first quarter and they miss the rest of that game and then miss a whole another game. That's really, in essence, two games. So I kind of agree with it. You know, I like it. It's right on point to me. It's not too much, not too little. I mean, because it is still football.
The problem that I have with it is for something that's such a bang-bang call, meaning not every time is targeting very clear cuts. A lot of times it comes down to opinion. I mean, I don't say a lot of times. I will say in the Michigan game in particular, Michigan State game in particular, in my opinion, it came down to a matter of, as an official, what do I think happened? Do I think that he got blocked into the player, or do I think he intentionally, you know, did it? So at that point in time, when it becomes subjective and not objective, not a play that you can clearly say, hey, this is what happened. That guy clearly did this. I think you get into a situation to where now a team loses their star player. Excuse me, I shouldn't say the star player. I didn't mean to say that. Now the team is penalized and loses a starting linebacker for the rest of a game based on a subjective penalty, which I guess pass interference is one of those. So, but I would say, I understand what they're trying to do with it, but I think I would say the penalty, it's a little harsh at times for something that's so subjective. But it didn't even decide the game. What decided the game was special teams. We talked a little bit last week about Texas beating Oklahoma after they had lost a couple of weeks in a row. Two weeks in a row they had special teams issues. TCU special teams didn't cost them, but a couple weeks before that they had lost a game on a special teams issue. Michigan, same thing happened to Michigan yesterday. Punter screwed up. Michigan State recovered the ball, scored the touchdown last play of the game. Michigan State remains undefeated. Michigan may be the best team in the country, but right now, because they lost the first game of the season, and because they lost this game, they're out of the. They probably don't have a shot at making it into the Final Four and making it into the college playoff. It was some great. I missed the Florida LSU game last night, so.
CNN went out there and laid an egg last night, too.
Which makes me, you know, I think the media or people love Alabama. So if Alabama continues to win out, there's no doubt in my mind that they'll be in the college football playoff because people love them that much. Hang on, we got a caller. Caller, you're on live with Tweety and LJ on Talk That Talk. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Am I on?
Yeah. Yes.
Come on. What's going on? This is Coach Savoy calling from Dallas, Texas.
What's
up, boys? I hear y'all talking football.
Yeah, we try and do a little something. How you been?
I've been doing all right now. Darius, I don't know who it was saying that Michigan might be the best football team in the country, but they lost that football game. You know, I don't know, Darius. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I'm a big LSU fan. We barely won last night. I'm not saying I believe in LSU, but to say Michigan – that's like saying Baylor's one of the best teams in college football. Come on now.
No, after they lost their first game, they won five straight. In those five games, I believe Michigan scored 15 or 14 double digit touchdowns. They only gave up two touchdowns in that time period, and they played well enough last night Well, I guess you don't play well enough to beat anybody if you don't actually win the game. But they put themselves in a position to where they could have won the game last night. I understand where you're coming from with LSU. They got a great running back. The question I have at LSU is, can the young quarterback, I think his name is Brandon Harris. I know his last name is Harris. Is he going to be good enough when they get in those situations against on a week-to-week basis? Is he going to be good enough for them to win, even though he played pretty good yesterday?
Now, hold on. I didn't say LSU was the best. I'm not saying that. I'm not a believer fully in LSU yet, because that guy, Brandon Harris, looks a lot like a guy I coached way back when at Tyler Street.
Is that Tweety?
No, it ain't Tweety. It looks like a guy named LJ that I know. If you look at his facial features and all that way back when, I think LJ was reincarnated as LSU's quarterback. I mean, I'm just saying.
That guy at least 10 times better than that guy named LJ, Coach. I will guarantee you that.
You know what I'm saying, Tweety?
Man, I hear you, man. They say he don't care. He just chill out. He just laid back like, oh, well.
No, boys, I just called him to say hello. I saw that blog, and I thought I'm going to call and say hello to the boys.
I appreciate you calling in.
All right, well, I'm going to tune back in. Y'all finish talking, y'all's talk. We'll talk to y'all soon.
All right, Coach.
I appreciate it.
All right, bye.
That old Coach Savoy, you kind of mean. I ain't heard that voice in a long time.
Yeah, I ain't talked to Coach Savoy in a while either. Goddamn, motherfucking bug. But so that wraps up the little college football talk. I want to move on to a subject now that has probably been covered from media outlets. It's been covered even on some of the just regular old news channels.
Okay.
The Lamar Odom thing. If you don't know by now, Lamar Odom was found, I believe it was Monday.
Passed out
in a room in a brothel. I think he was bleeding from the mouth and the nose.
I don't know if it was really blood. I know they just said it was like some white stuff or some yellow stuff coming out of his mouth and nose. Yeah.
The exact details of what happened, you know, we may never know unless Lamar Odom comes out and talks about it. But what has been there's been a couple of things reported. One was that he was possibly doing drugs either at the brothel or prior to arriving at the brothel. He may have been doing drugs. And the other report that's been going around out there is that he was taking some sort of herbal sexual stimulants or sexual stimulants.
Some sort of herbal
sexual supplements is probably the best way to say it. Now, Lamar Odom, tumultuous life. I think in the last 6 months he's had a couple of friends die. One of them died of drug overdose. Yeah, I would say in the past year and a half or so, not a lot of stuff coming out in a very positive way about him in the media as far as whether or not there's been a lot of rumored drug use. Of course, his personal life is kind of falling apart in the eyes of the public. Excuse me. He's gone through personal battles as far as his personal relationship with his strange wife, Khloe Kardashian, and it's all played out in the media, which is a lot. And if you just have known about his past growing up, he already had a challenging upbringing. Tweety, what are your thoughts on the Lamar Odom situation? By the way, right now there is media as of probably I'd say 15 minutes ago. I'm reading media reports that he is conscious now, breathing on his own, and some are even reporting that he is talking. I don't know if that talking we mean having an extended conversation, or he's just kind of like there saying a few words or making a few response to a few questions here and there. But anyways, what are your thoughts on the Lamar Odom situation as a whole?
Like I said, for one, I'm glad that he's doing better if those reports are true. That's a good thing. But I guess overall, man, I honestly really can't. My thought about the situation is just he's just a rich man going through a tough time in his life that he really can't handle. Like, I think because from what I'm hearing the reports, he's losing a lot of people close to him. You know, his wife went through a little separation period, I guess. He just recently lost a close friend. I know at one point in time he lost a child at 6 months. And he was in a car accident with another close friend that the friend actually passed away. So, yeah, I think it's just a man that's dealing with a lot of loss, man, and he don't know how to – he don't have a job no more in the field that he loved. Like, he's pretty much hitting rock bottom. And hopefully he can dig his way up out of it. Like I said, once again, I'm glad he's doing well, but I think I'm just looking at a pro athlete. The one you see on the movies that go from sugar to shit. And we looking at it in real life time. And whatever the situation is, like whether he, you know, has a problem with whatever, like his personal life, whether it's an addiction or his wife or loss of the kids, whatever it is, I'm just looking at a man who's going from being, not even gonna say on top of the world per se, but maybe in his life at one point in time he was on top of the world, and now he looks like he's losing everything.
If you want to get in on the conversation, the phone number to dial is 646-668-2343. My thoughts are on this are kind of got a little twofold, I guess. Number one, the image of Lamar Odom that is portrayed based on kind of how you view him or what world you know him from is very interesting if you pay attention to what's going on in the media. Because you have one side of the house, maybe people like you and I, and we'll just classify that as sports fans who know Lamar Odom, who was a big-time athlete coming out of high school. A lottery pick coming into the NBA, an incredible college basketball player. You know, he ended up in college, I think, 1 year, if I remember correctly, at the University of Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
But
they
upset the University of Kansas that year, if I remember correctly. That Kansas team had Paul Pierce, Ray LaFrent, Scott Pollard, and another guy whose name escapes me at the time. But, you know, this is the way we see him. Sports fans know that Lamar Odom. But then there is another Lamar Odom that another side of the world, if you will, knows, and that's kind of the reality genre, the reality population that knows him only as Lamar Odom, Khloe Kardashian's husband. Lamar Odom from, I think their TV show was called Khloe and Lamar, Lamar and Khloe, whatever. They only know him from that lane. So it's interesting to read online, whether it's media reports, whether it's newspaper articles, whether it's listening to podcasts, Twitter, whatever it may be, and see how people are viewing this. And it's funny to see the clash, because you have sports fans who are like, I can't believe that, you know, that these fans of the Kardashians are simplifying this man to a few years that he was on a TV show, and the sports fans, you know, like he had this pretty, I don't want to call it great NBA career, but he had a very good NBA career, didn't end very well, washed out with the Mavericks, washed out with the Clippers, and then he had a short, very short, when I say short, less like 10 days short, stint with the Knicks, and they're bickering back and forth, but in reality, you know, the guy is kind of a combination of both. He did do the reality show. He was married and still is legally married to Khloe Kardashian, but he was also, you know, an above-average basketball player throughout his basketball career. The other part about it is I probably am not as sympathetic to most people to Lamar Odom thing, to Lamar Odom situation as most people are. I mean, of course, you know, when people go through rough patches in life, you know, we all do, it happens. But he has been through so much in his lifetime that I would think that at this point he understands how to deal with it.
Now, I say that, and some people listening may say, well, that's cool, or somebody who may hear this may say, that's unrealistic. But you and I come from similar backgrounds. I mean, as far as, like, growing up in the ghetto, seeing death, destruction, drugs, et cetera, and violence take people we know and love at a young age. And, that you know, right. As you grow up. So in my mind, and it doesn't happen that way for everybody, but most people who live in those environments, you just learn to live with it. You learn how to adjust to it. So I don't think that I'm not as heavy on the thought that, you know, it was just too much to deal with, because he's a guy who's been dealing with so much for so long that I would think he would know how to cope with most of it right now. I think the interesting point that is missing there, though, is that is this related to not playing basketball? Because if you listen to a lot of different interviews, just go back throughout history, and we'll just talk specifically athletes who've grown up in those type of environments similar to Lamar Odoms. A lot of these guys, when they talk about the pain, the anger, and all these different negative emotions that come with growing up in those kind of environments, you hear them talk about when they step between the lines of this football, when they step on the court and it's basketball, that is a level of solitude. So they get on there, and that's where they let it all out. Now, that's their outlet, basically.
Right.
So and you've only really heard Lamar Odom really linked to drugs, to my knowledge, as far as him doing drugs, in the last couple of years.
See.
You connect the dots. What's really happened in the last couple of years of his lifetime? I'm not even talking about the personal stuff. I'm just talking about professionally. He's basically washed out of the league. A guy who most people would say could probably still play, I mean, not knowing really what shape he is in right now, but the years he washed out, when he played with the Mavericks, he played with the Clippers, most people, I mean, I would think most NBA executives, players, fans alike were very surprised that he washed out like that, because he had played well his last year with the Lakers, so it was very surprising. But now he doesn't have that outlet. You know, when his relationship and his name is being dragged through the mud in the media because it's associated with the Kardashians. Or, you know, like you said, the stuff that's happening with his friends, and it's all coming out in the media, and then these reports about him being a crackhead, doing this, that, and the third. Maybe he doesn't have that outlet to go just say, you know, I'm just going to go play basketball anymore, because it's been taken away from him. So I think that those, especially that second one, I wonder how much that plays into it, where he doesn't have that basketball outlet. So maybe he did, possibly, if the rumors in a past drug usage are true, you know, maybe that was it. Maybe that was his outlet. Not saying that it's the right outlet, but I'm just, you know, trying to put things into a little bit of perspective and kind of see, you know, where he might, why he might have taken his path after all these years going through all these different things and nothing really happened to him. There was one other thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on, but it's slipping my mind right now. But we'll just say NBA starts in 2 weeks.
Right.
Can't wait.
Right.
What do you got? Right now, today, just thinking, without going deep, who you got winning the Western Conference?
San Antonio. No. Ooh. Well, first of all, I got in the finals matchup, Western Conference final matchup, I got San Antonio and the Clippers. And I got San Antonio winning it one more time, going to the finals, representing the West.
Eastern Conference, who you got?
Cleveland. Somebody in the East can show me they can stop LeBron James from making it to the NBA Finals, I'm picking LeBron James to make it to the NBA Finals.
That was the other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on. How important do you think? Okay, let's look backstory. Tristan Thompson, the Cavs offered him. He wants basically a max contract. I believe it's 5 years, $80 million, which is not the NBA max. Obviously, that's still a lot of money. They didn't want. They reject that offer. The Cavs also had the 1 year qualifying offer. I want to say it's like 1 year, $6 million, something like that. Then they came back
his reportedly his agent, I think it was 3 years, $53 million or something that his agent wanted. The Cavs did not accept that because that is basically the same amount of money per year as a maximum contract. Now, normally I don't like to talk about players' money as far as, like, he's overpaid. You know, I don't like to too much get into that because I've never been in the business of watching another man's pockets. But I want you to look at this from the general. If you were a general manager, or let's do fan first, from a fan perspective or from your perspective analyzing this, how important do you think Tristan Thompson is to the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Honestly, not that important. And I mean, as far as his rebounding goes, yeah, but if you can get a healthy Kevin Love, he can get you those rebounds and more point production too, and he'll space the floor out better for LeBron James, because if you're going to use Mozgov as an offensive big, then Tristan Thompson is really in the way when you got LeBron James in the game, because now you got three people trying to operate out the post. And LeBron James is going to dominate the ball anyway, so Tristan Thompson's just standing there waiting on the rebound. Whereas you can get Kevin Love, who can spread the flow out. He knows how to crash the boys and get those same rebounds. And I ain't going to say he's irrelevant, but at the same time, he's not, as far as the Cavaliers go, he's not max contract worthy, because they got another rebounder, and that rebounder can also give them offensive production.
Now,
we got about a little bit over 2 minutes left, so I'm going to give my thoughts again quickly. I don't think Tristan Thompson is worth the maximum level contract to any team, and that's speaking just specifically, if I'm a general manager, I would not pay Tristan Thompson that kind of money. Now, I do think on the right team, he is probably a starting power forward. Possibly he can shoot, very limited offensively. He's basically going to be a rebounder, a defender. He's not a great defensive player, but he's pretty quick and athletic, so that helps him out. He's going to be a rebound defender, you know, going to get those loose balls, you know, hustle play and stuff like that. That's a lot of money to pay a guy who's just basically a hustle player. Number two, Anderson Varejao is healthy, who, in my opinion, I mean, I got to see how he is coming off the injury. But prior to the injury, I would have taken Anderson Varejao over Tristan Thompson, size, you know, and he basically does the same thing, and maybe he's probably a little bit better, possibly offensively. And like you said, a healthy Kevin Love, and then you got Mozgov for an entire season. Plus, LeBron James also plays some power forward, and I think Varejao gives you probably a little bit more when you want to go small ball with LeBron at the four. I think Varejao gives you a little bit more at that five position than Tristan Thompson, because he's not a great shot blocker, but he is taller than Tristan Thompson. So he's going to give you a little bit. He's a better rim protector just based on size alone. So
right.
I don't think he's that important. I personally think the Cavs make it to the finals regardless of whether or not Tristan Thompson's on that team or not. Maybe not last year. Maybe they'll make it that far last year because of injuries. But a healthy Cavaliers team this year makes it to the Eastern Conference Finals with or without Tristan Thompson. And we got 20 seconds left. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you to one of our former high school coaches, Coach Savoy, for calling in.
Coach Savoy.
Same time, same channel next week. Tweet you guys last part in time.
Congratulations to the City Chris Thomas Youth Sports Organization. Savage, you know, man, we had two wins yesterday. Two out of three teams won yesterday. And I'm just happy for them. Congratulations. See y'all next week.